welcome to Movies You Should See. This week we're reviewing the 1988 movie,
exactly.
Sorry, Heathers, starring Christian Slater and Winona Ryder, directed by Michael Lehman.
Yeah,
Lehman.
Who also directed the legendary movie Hudson Hawk with Bruce Willis.
Yep.
Oh, and Airheads, which I genuinely love that movie. My life would be worse if Airheads wasn't in it. So, but he also did Heathers, and that's what we're here to talk about.
The dude who wrote it really wanted Stanley Kubrick to do this.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Good luck there.
Well, he got nowhere. He sent in the script and he got no response.
You're getting ahead of us here, Alison.
All right. Okay.
We'll go around the room and see what people thought about it. Laura, how did you feel about Heathers?
I saw Heathers years ago when I was younger. Not when it came out, but when I was probably about 12 or 13, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I really liked it then. But having rewatched it for the first time in probably years this week, I do still like it. And it's got lots of, I don't know, maybe because of the person I was back when I first watched it, I'd still got a place in my heart, I guess. But I'm not sure it stood up to a second watch, really.
Okay. Alison?
I kind of agree, and I think that the only thing that's changed are the times, really. I think it's a film about teenage suicide and shootings and mock deaths, and it's very black comic satire, but too many real incidents have happened since this film was made for it to ever get made again.
Yeah.
So it was a snapshot of a period of time, and that's how I've got to see it. That the times have changed, and some of this film is wrong now, and it's changed the way I enjoy it. Completely changed the way that I view it.
Yeah.
There you go.
Scott.
Very similar to what Alison just said. I have to believe that this movie, people might consider making this movie today, but I don't think it would be incredibly well received today. Compared to how it fared when it first came out. There are some aspects of it that definitely do not age well, considering what has happened since. But as a bit of a snapshot, though certainly it's heightened reality, it definitely serves as a glimpse into the time that it was made. And this is the first time that I had ever seen it.
Oh, really?
And which I understand is rather odd, being 34 and never having seen Heathers. At least now I understand where some of the quotes that I hear people my age using finally come from. I understand when someone asks me to fuck them gently with a chainsaw.
Yeah.
Or when someone, in apropos of nothing, will just shout out, I love my dead gay son.
Yeah. Does that still happen?
Every now and again. It does.
Right. Okay.
So when I heard it, I wasn't quite expecting it. And then it just came out of nowhere.
There's a lot of the humanities gets said.
It was four times as funny for me, that particular line, because of the experience that I have with it.
Well, it's quite alien to us because this is not our high school experience, obviously, and we're going to talk about it. You know, I suspect as British people who've gone through a school system where none of this is a risk at all. We don't have school shootings. It doesn't happen. No one takes weapons to school. So it's more of a fantasy probably to us than it is to American viewers.
I feel this might be an interesting turnabout on this episode, because the last time that I was the only American on an episode of Movies You Should See, we were discussing Ghost Watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now this is my territory now.
Yes. We do have one more opinion to get in here.
Yes.
It's all right. You don't have to creep gently towards me.
He's terrified. He looks like he's approaching a bomb.
I have to creep gently because I don't want you to explode on me in a bad way.
I promise not to explode on you in any manner.
There's a good way to explode on you.
I'll show you later, dear.
Oh, God. Well,
yeah, no one needed to hear that.
Don't the stars look wonderful from down here?
Don't they? Yeah.
I did not enjoy this movie at all. I didn't find it funny. I found it horrendously insensitive in parts. I couldn't even see if I just was too... I tried to look at it as, okay, I'm being hypersensitive to specific issues. If I try and step back from that, can I find the funny here? No, I still really can't. Yeah, I have no idea how it got 7.2 on IMDb. That's me. I'll go into detail in a minute.
Okay.
I'm going to give my own little summary at this point. I picked this film at random on Netflix, basically. And then it wasn't till watching it again a mere 2 hours ago that I realized the content of this film and absolutely shat myself. Because it's really difficult now, because it might have been funny in 1988, but now it's a film about teenage suicide and murder and blowing up your school and having a gun at school and all these other things. And it's like, of all the films we could have bloody done, here we are.
And that's going nowhere near the homophobic stuff.
I forgot about the
homophobia.
Yeah.
Of which it is full of. But nevertheless.
And the coldness, the complete emotional detachedness that is applied to every single murder.
Well, I think what we're really here to discuss is not necessarily whether or not Heathers is a good film or not, because when it came out, it was judged to be a good film.
Yeah.
People watched it, people enjoyed it.
It was a cult classic.
It was indeed.
It was a cult. People watched it in their droves. But I think there was a group of people who liked it more than others. I mean, I'm a person who watched it around about 1989, 1990, probably when it first came out on video to rent. And it was a huge film. It was a huge film. And I can remember being quite affected by it. I was probably about 16.
Affected by it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because to me, I was watching something that was darkly comic, and I was already into that kind of humour when I was that age. So I could laugh at horrific lines that were said with absolutely no emotion.
Well, what I'm essentially saying is we're here to not judge whether it's a good film or not, but we're here to talk about why it's not acceptable now.
Well, because we can all kind of fantasize in our minds, basically, when we go to school that we might pick off a few people at school. And that's a kind of teenage fantasy. And it's okay in Britain maybe to have that fantasy because there's no way it plays out. But unfortunately, in America, there's been a lot of acting these kind of teenage angst violence out at school. And I can use the word a lot because it is a lot. It's horrible when you look at the stats of kids that have gone into schools with weapons and started shooting their classmates and teachers.
There's also the suicide element of it as well.
Yeah.
We've recently in our town had a 14-year-old girl who committed suicide.
Yeah.
And it sort of, maybe it hit me more because I live in a little tiny town where everyone knows everyone. And so watching this so close to that happening, it was difficult. Like you say, Alison, when I watched this, I was about 14, 15. And to me, it was that sort of introduction to watching things that were a bit different and a bit dark and a bit more intelligent than most films that I would normally be watching. But now when I watch it, I've grown up, I think, since then, and the world's a different place as well, like you say. And I just...
It's a lot more uncomfortable, isn't it?
Yeah. That's probably the best word to describe it. There are bits of it that made me feel really, really uncomfortable.
And in a bit of yourself, you're thinking, God, did I really once guffaw at that line? Because that's not a line you guffaw at anymore.
No.
And you know, there's a certain amount of shame there that I felt watching it, you know, like, oh, I once found that bit really funny.
But I often think that about myself when I look back on my teenage self anyway and think, God, I was such an idiot.
You know, and this film is about teenage idiots.
Yeah. Yeah,
You know, on the brink of adulthood. I mean, the first Heather Chandler dresses like a 40-year-old businesswoman. Yeah. I mean, she's just bizarre.
And they play croquet.
Exactly. And, you know, they behave like ladies what do lunch. They're not schoolgirls. But I knew who they were in my school.
Yeah.
You know, I knew who that clique was. And it was an extreme version of it. And, you know, that's how I have to approach Heathers, because I think that's how it is to be approached, is that this is the most extreme, twisted view of high school that there is. This is the nth degree. This is what where your imagination would take you if...
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely very caricatured and to the nth degree. I just couldn't see how even 21 years ago, no, sorry, 25 years ago, I can't do counting. It's the year I was born.
Which is probably why you have a great, yeah, you can't even see it in
I can't even see it, how it was funny back then. It just does not compute.
Ignoring all of the scenes that involve the stuff that's really personal to you and looking at the rest of it.
Even looking at the rest of it, the comment you made earlier about it being an incredible amount of emotional detachment at every point when they're committing these murders.
Yeah.
That came across as that completely broke realism for me. No real person acts that standoffish when they've done these sort of things.
Mm. Nobody smiles at a funeral while they're stood over their best friend's body.
No. And it didn't come off as emotionally detached. It came off as badly acted.
Do you think?
I thought that, yeah. I actually tried to watch this movie a few days back with one of my mates who's 19 years old. And we got 40 minutes through this movie and he's like, can we please turn this off? It's shit.
Okay.
So I actually watched this movie in two parts because Luke vetoed it and wouldn't watch the rest of it.
Okay. I can understand. I can completely understand. This film was... suffered over time, really, and
it happened just after he told me to turn it off, just after the gay double suicide.
Yeah, because essentially what you've got is we've got a couple of jocks who've been doing the jock thing and bullying and what have you, and throwing their masculine power around, and the way that they plot to off these boys is to fake a homosexual relationship, and that is displayed by a mineral water bottle by the boys and them being in their underwear, and the whole thing is just so contrived and horrible.
I found that bit almost laughable. Not funny, just laughable. It's the reaction of the police officers on finding that, and then the reaction of people immediately after that in school and at the funeral, and that's what it made me angry. Because it's not because people did do and will into the future for longer than I'm happy to admit actually commit suicide for the reasons outlined in those suicide notes.
Yeah, I know.
And not just the gay one, the rest of them, all of them. Mm. And because it's far too close to the truth and real life, and I know people who have lost friends or family members for the same reasons.
For the same pain.
And I can't find it funny.
Yeah.
This is the
full failure of the film, is that it's become too real. It is too real.
I think that it's a failure of the society that the film is in, not necessarily
the
film.
I don't think
it's
a failure of society. I think it's growth of society that's made this something unacceptable now. It's an odd one. I mean, this film was viewed in very different eyes in 1988. It has failed now because society has grown.
I think you're absolutely right there. It's because society is better now, because the things that I am so angry and so upset about in this movie were acceptable when it was made and released, and they are very much not so now.
It feels odd, doesn't it? It feels like we're watching prehistory. It feels like we're watching like the Alf Garnett and Love Thy Neighbour and all that kind of bullshit that happened in the 70s. But
it's subtly different from if you watch an old film where women are being oppressed or people of colour are being oppressed.
Yeah.
Because while that is a snapshot of history, that has all but been eradicated.
Yeah, this is still going on. You know, kids are still feeling stigmatized and outside. And
whereas everything in this film is still happening.
Exactly, and it's happening more so, in fact. More so than at the time that it was made. I mean, maybe it was funny because it was rare in 1988 and it didn't feel very rare anymore.
That's what I was saying. Was that this is meant as a satire, as a it at no point endorses the negative behavior seen in the film.
No, we're supposed to hate a lot of people.
Exactly.
The best person is Veronica, the Winona Ryder character, and she's morally bankrupt as well.
But this is the point of JD, is that he's on this killing spree, whatever, because he's sickened by the horrible people that frequent his high school. And he sees it everywhere.
Yeah,
and
but he doesn't understand
it.
The irony in that, that he's the monster, actually.
No, I understand that. But the point is that when you have characters like the really homophobic jocks, it's not saying that it's making fun of them. Their presence is to be
They were the homophobes.
At. They're the homophobes. It's not that the film is sending out a homophobic message. It's making fun of the homophobes.
I don't know. It's tenuous because it's really hard because that we've not seen enough maybe of them being homophobic and being violent about it. We do see it.
I'm going to actually steal a quote from Ari because we've just done a podcast with Ari and Ari used this quote. When your satire is indistinguishable from real life, it's not satirical.
Absolutely.
Exactly. That's what I mean, how real life has become
this
true.
This is what I was saying about it being a reflection of the society it's in rather than the film itself, was that in 1988 this was satire, but it is not in 2013 because of what, like Ari is saying.
It's a bit too
and,
true
and
now.
And so the problem is that all these bad things it was making fun of, like extreme homophobia in high schools and teenage suicides and high school shootings and this sort of thing have become a real thing. That wasn't the case in 1988. In 1988, you could make fun of these things in the way that this film does.
Yeah.
But now they've happened. Society has changed, and not for the better in that sense.
Yeah.
Because these things have changed.
Back then, this film was, I would probably describe it as a cartoonish satire.
Yeah.
And now the satirical element is gone, having been counterbalanced by the growth and changes in society, and all that's left is the cartoon, and because of present circumstances, it's viewed as a tasteless and offensive cartoon. Well, offensive to most. I'm starting to feel like an unfeeling ghoul at this point, because I'm realizing I might be the only person here that wasn't offended while I was watching it. Now, I don't subscribe to some of the things that the film was trying to say, but as I was watching it, I felt very detached. While seeing it as a very cartoonish presentation, I also didn't find myself connecting with the world or the setting of the movie at all, even though I lived through it in maybe not a terribly similar high school, but similar enough that I could recognize a lot of the elements that were in the movie. But it was so long ago for me personally, and so different culture-wise to today, that it had very little connection to reality for me. It was almost like watching a complete fantasy movie. It's a different world. It was a different time. And I think I do this with a lot of films that I watch, is I will isolate the film, and I will not connect the film to my own life and the world that I live in. Usually. So I did not find myself watching the film and reflecting on society while I was watching it. It was just me watching a piece of what is intended to be pure entertainment. Even if they didn't mean for it to be pure entertainment, if they were trying to make a statement when they made the movie, I didn't hear that statement because I usually don't look for it.
I understand what you're saying. It's very, I'm with you.
I feel quite sad. Actually, I feel like, you know, when you realise that something you're quite fond of is quite tarnished and actually a bit shit.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And I don't think it's because of the performances. I really like Christian Slater and Winona Ryder in this. I think, you know, they were strong at the time. Brad Pitt was auditioned for this, but he was too nice.
I think Winona Ryder was only about 16 as well when she was in this,
She was really young. She was really young and I think really strong.
Let's talk about some of the people in this film then. Let's do that. Let's move away from the topics of the film, because we've upset ourselves enough with that. I'm sorry, everyone. I'm so sorry. Wasn't it going to be Mad Max instead? What did I originally have slated for this
one? Black Swan. Oh, yes.
Yeah, you see, that would have been better. That's a much better film. It's got Natalie Portman in as well, so, you know. But anyway, I'd have just said something inappropriate. Let's talk about Winona Ryder and Christine Slater. Do you remember when they owned cinema? When everything was just like, how awesome are Winona Ryder and Christine Slater? And then they both went nuts for a bit, and now they just look old.
And they occasionally pop up where you least expect them.
They do indeed.
Like Star Trek.
Christian Slater is especially good at that.
Popping up in Star Trek? Yes, indeed.
He is. I've never had a problem with him. I've always quite liked him.
I like Christian Slater. He's never been in anything that's I've thought has been particularly bad or...
He's a decent actor.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was a good JD.
Yeah.
You know, his performance of that character, it was completely believable.
I have to say, late 80s Christian Slater hair was spectacular.
Yeah, it was. He was the best fringe around.
Up until including Robin Hood.
Yeah, where he had the same hair.
Yeah, he had the same hair for like a decade in every film.
It was good hair.
It was amazing hair. I'd have killed for 1988 Christian Slater hair.
He looked cool on that bike, too.
I think I might still kill for that hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, no, girl, you see, I had that hair. I was watching this like, oh, shit, that's my hair. God, that's my hair.
I had a haircut like that at one point, Alison.
God. You know the fucking Heather Chandler, the first one. I've dispensed with the scrunchie, but... The blonde perm was me.
Can you imagine Alison with a blonde perm? I'm having trouble.
With shoulder pads and everything. I had shoulder pads.
I think I've actually seen a photo. I think at your party there was one on the wall.
There was one on the wall. There was maybe a couple on the wall of the perm teenage phase. And it was perfectly around this time. So, you know, oh God, I was just cringing, like, and the size of the shoulder pads. I used to really covet Winona Ryder's black and dog tooth check padded jacket thing. It was a beautiful thing. I never wanted to dress like the other Heathers because I thought they wanted to be too old.
Yeah.
You know, with the tweed and the A-line skirts and... The scrunchie and all the rest of it and a little court shoes. I wanted to rail against all that. I didn't want to look like a teacher or anything like that, you know. And I just see her and I just think, well, you look a bit like a teacher. I don't want to dress like you. But we know the rider was cool.
Yeah, definitely.
And a boyfriend was cool. And that's the thing. And it's a shame because the film had to lose... the references to Catcher in the Rye, which are kind of inevitable, but in this they changed it to Moby Dick, which took it all away, really.
It doesn't really work, does it?
No.
Sorry, I got caught up in Christine Slater movies.
Did you?
Do you know which my favourite one is?
True Romance.
The Wizard.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
True Romance.
Well, it's a perfectly good film. There's nothing wrong with it.
He was
romance.
A voice in Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest.
Oh. He was indeed. I saw that at the cinema, as was Tim Curry and Robin Williams.
Yes. I think I saw Fern Gully at the cinema as well.
He played a small rainforest fairy.
For my money,
he did.
You can't beat Broken Arrow.
I've not seen Broken Arrow.
Broken Arrow is a fun movie.
It's yeah, fun is pretty much the best you can say about it. You can't call it a good movie, but it's a fun movie. It took a while for people to realize that John Woo does not make good movies. He makes fun movies.
Yeah.
He was imagine Michael Bay, roll it back about a decade and replace explosions with incredibly unrealistic slow motion martial arts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Broken Arrow is not a bad movie. He's done some good ones. Murder in the First is brilliant. You should see Murder in the First. That's got Kevin Bacon in one of the performances of his career. I believe it's set in Alcatraz, Murder in the First. About basically the massive abuse of prisoners. and this one guy in particular.
He was in a few episodes of The West Wing.
Was he?
Never seen it. I didn't, I've even forgot he was in Interview with a Vampire. The other film I wish we could have kind of seen to go along with Heather's is Pump Up the Volume, because it came not long after, and it kind of feels like a very closely related film in that he plays somebody who is disillusioned with high school and life in general and spreads that to other kids, causing great destruction and dismay in adults. That
oh, and he's
thing.
Got a microphone as well.
Well, he's got a, he does a pirate radio
sounds like
station.
Someone else around here.
he does a pirate radio station at home and rants about stuff that's shit.
He was a sort of go-to rebel teenage leading man, wasn't
he? Because of the hair.
Probably.
That is rebel hair, that
the
is.
The hair on the cover of the DVD is quite spectacular.
And my mother would have never let me have that
Bowie-ish
hair.
He looks a bit Bowie-ish as well in that shot.
He can raise one eyebrow very well as well, and that always helps.
So it's a talent, that one.
That
it's a marketable skill.
Yep.
Although he's been in some rubbish lately. I don't know. I hesitate to say that he's never in anything bad. Because I think he has been.
I think he's been in some bad stuff, you know.
Yeah. But he was probably perfectly good in it. I would, like I said, don't have a problem with him. What's Winona Ryder up to these days?
She's Spock's mum.
She is.
Yeah.
But that was like a morning's work at best. You know, that's not keeping
her
busy.
She was in Black Swan, wasn't she?
Again, for like an afternoon. She had maybe a minute of screen time in Black Swan. And the Iceman.
She was in Frank and Weenie. What more do you want? She was in Homefront. She's been in Homefront.
What's Homefront?
Isn't it that thing? That TV thing?
That TV thing? That one I was watching?
Yeah.
No, that's Homeland. Homefront is an action thriller movie with James Franco and Jason Statham.
That'll be
awesome.
She was in Alien Resurrection, but that's not really recent. But it's about the Zoolander.
She's working anyway. She's got jobs.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's not going hungry.
Yeah. Well, rest assured that she's making more money than probably any of us.
Exactly.
Probably all of us put together.
Probably.
Well, there you go. How long have we been doing this? I've lost track of time. Not long enough at all. What else shall we talk about?
I've found myself commenting silently because I was all by myself that I don't think Shannon Doherty ever looked as good as she did in this movie. I think after they wrapped on filming, she just started to stop being that attractive. Maybe it was the hair color. I don't know. I thought she looked very nice in this movie, which was a shock to me because I never thought she was all that amazing looking.
She was still okay, Mallrats.
Did you ever watch 90210?
No.
You see, that's the thing. It's 90210.
Why would Scott have seen Beverly Hills 90210?
Well, he's too young, really.
No,
he's
not.
He is. He's a
for
man.
For contemporary stuff for this, yes, he is.
I don't know. I don't feel like I am. And we're the same age.
90210 was an incredibly popular show right when I was at the age that people would be watching it. I just didn't watch it.
Right. Yeah. Well, that was the good stuff, you see. That was the squeaky clean view of the American high school. This was the dark and twisted one. And she was in this before she got the 90210 gig. And she became much more polished as an actress and comfortable in her roles when she was in 90210. But, you know, 90210 had a lot more heart to it than this film does. And that might seem like a really obvious statement because the whole point of this movie is there's no heart.
Gosh, I've just looked at the IMDb for Beverly Hills 90210, and clearly in the last 10 years, someone has done something horrible to Jason Priestley. He just looks, my God, he's not aging well.
Is he not?
No, he's not.
Well, neither is Ian Ziering, as evidenced from seeing him star in Sharknado.
Oh, dear. And of course, Brian Austin Green married Megan Fox. Which I think would be fun for an afternoon, but...
But possibly not for marriage.
Not for a long time.
Yeah, for an afternoon,
time,
but no. Eventually she would probably, you know, speak, and then it's all over.
Yeah. And to be fair, I think I could get more than an afternoon out of it, but...
Mm. Let's have a look what Luke Perry looks like. Well, I don't know why I'm doing this.
Luke Perry? He's all wrinkly.
No, he's done all right. He's done all right.
Now, if we want to talk about Jason Priestley for a second, before he started to age ungracefully, and I think the general opinion of tonight's movie will welcome this momentary distraction to a different film, a film that most people haven't heard of, Love and Death on Long Island. This is one of the most unexpected casting pair-ups that I've ever seen. Jason Priestley and John Hurt.
Jason Priestley and John Hurt.
In the same room.
Mm-hmm. Wow. In many scenes together. And it's actually a really good film.
Love and Death on Long Island.
Mainly because of John Hurt, but still.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it. It's somewhere from the mid-90s, I know, but...
Yeah, 1997.
I was impressed. Someone from 90210 went on to do something good.
Yeah.
And then someone else went on to do Sharknado.
Well, the critics seem to really love it. The audience, not so much. I'll watch that. That looks up my street.
I'm struggling to find something else for us to jump on to talk about because there's nothing to talk about with the fucking movie. I hate that we've done this film.
Well, it's weird because, you know, if we looked at it contemporaneously in 1988, we would have been saying completely different things. It would have been, oh my gosh, this is so funny. Isn't that so-and-so? All of that kind of thing, you know, and it would have been a subversive teenage dark comic fantasy, and it's just none of those things anymore. And that's just changed everything.
I think still back then there were things that I probably had issues with, but I think at the time when I watched it, I was the outsider at school and the girl who wasn't in the popular clique. And
exactly.
I just saw it as, I never wanted to kill anyone at school.
No.
But I did think, God, yeah, I wish those bitches would just go and stop, you know, making me feel like shit, basically.
And this film's just going, haha, we're going to run with that thought and actually visualise what would happen if you really did do that and wipe this bitch from the surface of the screen.
And I think that's why back when I watched it, it meant something completely different to me now. Now I can look back and think, well, they're all doing a lot worse off than I am now. And also I've grown to be a lot more comfortable in my skin now, so I'm not feeling the same that I did back when I was 15. Yeah. Anyway.
I mean, if we take another, like, teenage pressure cooker movie from the same period of time and we look at something like The Breakfast Club, then when we watch that, we can kind of see ourselves in whatever character is in that room.
I have never seen The Breakfast Club.
Oh, Lord.
I know.
Oh, my God. That needs rectifying.
I've only seen it once myself.
I'm sorry.
It's a really, really precious movie. And when you're looking back at the movies that were precious to you as a teenager and looked at teenage school life, then this might have not been the same as a British experience, but it's touched and held me for a long time, that film, and it still holds up today.
And I think that's very telling about this film, is that there are lots of films that I have like that I watched when I was that age, that even though as I've grown older, I don't necessarily still feel the same that I did back then or identify with characters in the same way, they still have that nice, comfortable feel to them. They're like an old pair of pajamas or something. You put them on and you can go back to that time and you can feel happy. Whereas I've never gone back to this film, which obviously meant that it never meant, I don't know, it was never something that I thought, oh, I know, I'll watch Heathers again.
Yeah. Because, it's a dark film and The Breakfast Club's not.
Yeah.
You know, it looks at teenage pain and why we all feel like we don't fit, like, you know, life is so hard as a teenager. It does that, but it does it kindly and well, and you end the film feeling good and having a really a nice experience with it. And this film's the opposite. It's a dark place.
And you're right in that when I went back to that girl I was when I was 15, when I was watching this film, I didn't go back and it wasn't a nice experience. It made me feel crap. It made me feel like 15-year-old Laura again, and that was horrible. Yeah. So why would...
That bit of shame that goes like, oh, God, was I really like that?
And God, I felt so horrible back then. I felt so awful all the time. Why on earth did I... why did I feel like that? And it was quite... I don't know. It was quite uncomfortable, really.
Whereas you can watch The Breakfast Club, see yourself in that room, because it's all kind of done in one room, and know who you are in that, and be okay with it, because the person on the screen processes it for you. And gets to a nice conclusion and is okay with themselves and has gained something by the experience that they've gone through. No one does that in this film. There is no gain. It's all horrible.
I can't imagine Veronica in 5 years' time looking back on this time and thinking, oh, I'm so glad I went through that. I've come out a much better, stronger person. I think she's probably really fucked up for the rest of her life now, which isn't really what I want to feel. Obviously.
No. And, you know, and in the manner that it's been done, how uncomfortable we are with that 25 years later, it didn't feel like a nice thing to revisit, really.
No. I felt the whole thing about the suicide, how the I can't remember the name of the character, but the big girl who pins the note to herself and walks out in the road, and when they hear about it, they laughingly say, well, she was trying to copy the popular girls. And it was that just...
There was nothing else there, was there?
That really... The whole idea of suicide being... being trivialized like that.
Completely. And it was at school. It was like, oh, God, if she was a cheerleader, I would have given you the day off. She's only got value if she's a cheerleader or something like that, but she's not. She's an old one, so we're not even going to mourn her at school. And the flip line of, I'm going home, what are you going to do? I'm going to mourn.
Yeah.
Just like with no emotion whatsoever. No one means it. The funeral for the first Heather is awful. And Winona Ryder turns up in this really flamboyant blue outfit that stands out from everybody else's black. Yeah. And you've got one girl smiling like, oh, God, at least she's out of the way. Now I can climb up the power ladder a bit more often. It's completely morally bereft.
Oh, it's just...
And I can still find lines of it really funny, like, you know, the coldest lines. I go, laugh out of discomfort, which is an element of comedy I really, really like, you know, when people push you to feel as bad as you possibly can with one line. I quite like that. So those moments are still there for me, really.
I think, I don't know, it's not even the fact that they were the morally, you know, morally, okay, fair enough, they might have wished that girl dead or whatever reason they feel the way that they do. It's just the fact that there wasn't really any emotion there at all. Having dealt with death and suicide, I don't... Even people that I don't like, I can't just sit there and laugh at a funeral or think that it's funny or just not care. I just find that lack of any emotion at all. Well, like you said, it's very cold. It's very heartless.
It's all done on purpose.
Yeah. But I don't find that as comfortable and as funny as maybe I did when I was younger. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing that's changed is time, really. The times and us as we've grown. It's become something completely different. Although it remains, in essence, the same film. We're just watching it in different times with different minds.
I think it's fairly clear from the filmmaker's standpoint that they did not expect nor intend for the humorous and exaggerated satire that they were making to become over time incredibly insensitive.
Yeah.
Which is, it's a way of saying it's not their fault. They didn't make a movie that set out to be horrible, but over time it kind of has become that by default. It's like it was a really nice looking helium balloon floating through the sky when it was made, but now it has become sad and deflated and laying on the ground. It used to be a pretty color once upon a time. You can tell from looking at it, but now it's just a sad, deflated balloon.
Yeah.
I feel a bit like a sad, deflated balloon after watching it as well.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, everyone. No, I'm okay. So sorry.
It's okay, though, because I'm okay with looking at it again, because I'm all right with being put straight.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm okay with that. It's like, oh, yeah, oh, it's like that. Oh, that's not how I remember it. But that's okay. It's like eating something that you remember eating from childhood, and you eat it again. It's like, yeah, it's all right. I don't know why I've fantasized about eating it again for 37 years, but yeah. But it was a bit worse than that. It was like, no, that's really foul. Get it out of my mouth, kind of revisit. It was not good.
Well, here's an aspect of the film that allows us to step away from the overall message that the plot was trying to send us and focus on a smaller detail that we might be able to get some more conversation out of. Did anyone else find themselves waiting for some type of payoff regarding the way JD and his father would communicate with each other in referring to each other as their opposite roles? Was anyone else waiting for a payoff that just never came about that?
Yeah.
It was kind of odd, and it was like it was building up to a punchline that never happened.
What I always assumed was that these weren't actually really father and son. And they were using those words sarcastically, like, that is your job here. You are father. You are son. You know, if there is a relationship there, I don't feel like they're even related. Or there is, it's so fractured and just full of hatred that they can only communicate with barbs.
Well, wasn't it a 3-hour script? Which makes me think that maybe there was a much bigger plot going on with him and his dad that somebody got cut out of the movie.
Maybe. I don't know.
Probably, if that's the case, then another example of father-related material possibly being cut out was this repeated banter between Veronica and her father, with her calling him an idiot.
Yeah, and him being okay with that.
You know, once is kind of funny, twice is clearly setting us up for a triple of some kind. But they only said it twice. I was waiting for some other exchange where she calls him an idiot, but nothing.
No, it just comes across as that, like, she's got zero respect for either of them. She doesn't turn up for meals. When she does turn up, she barely graces them with her presence. And
well, she does compliment the pâté.
Well, wouldn't you? She's being polite, and that's what a preppy little bitch what does lunch would say. Oh, I love the pâté, darling. Nice canapes. You know, just that throwaway society bullshit ravel that posh girls come up with at society lunches. That's how she treats her mother.
And it helps me to care about the characters even less, since I've never had pâté. Oh, something else that I've never experienced, and you do that every day.
Are you shitting me?
Mm-hmm. Never.
Well, no, it's a Christmas Day staple. It's our starter on Christmas Day.
Sorry, did you just say you'd never had pâté?
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't trust you quite as much now. I don't know what that is.
Shifty eyes.
Is something a little odd there?
I've said too much.
I mean, I'd understand if you said you'd had it and didn't like it, but never even... Okay.
Yeah.
Never.
It's delish, especially my one.
It is, actually. I heartily recommend you try yourself some pâté with some toast.
Nor have I ever had sauerkraut.
No, I've never had sauerkraut.
That's also delicious.
No appealing reason.
It's best made by a German.
Yeah. Sauerkraut. Why would you put that in your mouth? Just from the name.
It's gorgeous. It's really nice. Well, you don't really like cabbage anyway, so.
Who likes cabbage?
I do.
I like cabbage.
It's really nice, and it's really nice pickled with a few different spices, and it's just lovely. You don't know. You have no idea. And especially then when it's served with a big fucking sausage. It's amazing.
You can say I like cabbage all you want.
We're not doing this in 2014, but we're going to do it. And I really wanted to make it a goal of us. We need to go to Bavaria for a break, for a little holiday.
A trip to Bavaria. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Based in Munich, and then we just need to eat.
As one does.
And maybe go into Austria and have... Yeah, and you're
so
just like,
many of your trip ideas are based on food.
Of course they are. That's why I want to go places. That's it. You don't. You only just clock this. We go places on holiday because I want to eat there.
You wanted to eat your way around Vegas, and we did that.
I was going to say that. I've heard about your trip to Vegas. That's basically what you did.
Well, you don't really have time to do much else other than go, what the fuck is that, and why is it there? And oh, let's eat this.
Well, I wasn't there to gamble, and apparently I'm not to shag hookers, so your third alternative is food.
Yeah, you're basically just asking what the fuck and eating. That's Vegas. That's what it's for. I want to go to Italy. We need to go to Italy because I am starving for Italy. I'm fucking starving for that place.
I need to go
to Italy.
What does that even mean? This
I'm
is Jamie Oliver's bloody
Italy.
Fault.
I need
this
to
is.
Go to Italy. That's it. I need to eat everything in Italy.
I need to eat all the things.
Yeah.
I need to eat Italy.
I went to Italy when I was two. What good is that, right? What good is going
I don't
to
know,
Italy
Alison,
when you're two?
No good.
You go when you're hungry, and you're hungry at 40. We need to go to Italy.
Okay. I'm going to call this round now, and we have to give this a mark out of 5.
Oh, dear me, dear me, dear me, dear me.
I don't know what I'd give it. I really don't. So this should be...
Who wants to take bets? This is going to be the low score of the Movies You Should See relaunch.
Yeah. This might well be it, you know? Yeah, we might beat Rounders
I've
here.
I've never heard a team so negative and feel so let down.
I've never felt guilty for doing a film.
I know.
Now I feel guilty
for
it.
Oh, I felt pretty grimy about doing Ghost, but, you know, it was kind of funny, but this is not funny. Like,
no, it's not. It's
like
just...
the Ghost mistake, as I like to refer to it.
Don't feel so bad, Rich. You feel guilty for making everyone watch it, and I feel guilty for not being nearly as offended as everyone else.
Okay, that works for me.
But, maybe we were just British. I don't know. But we've gone a very long way in Britain from the 1970s to now. We're very offended by most things. We're quite a sensitive nation, I feel.
It's almost as if it was like 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And to think that I was excited to be the lone American this time. That backfired.
Yeah. Well, Alison, what are you going to give this film out of 5?
Right, okay, I'm going to give you 2 scores. What I would have given...
No, that's no
right,
good.
Right, well, I'm still going to say... In 1988, I would have said 4.
Yeah.
In 2013, I say 2.
Okay. That's not unreasonable.
Because some bits are funny, and there's some good performances, but the rest of it's just awful, so...
I'm only taking your 2013 score, by the way.
Yeah, of course, of course.
Laura, what's your score for Heathers?
It's 2 as well, and only just 2.
It's going to beat Rounders. It's going to destroy Rounders at this point. Scott, what are you saying?
Well, I am going to have to say, based on my ability to disconnect and not look at the blah, 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 pretend I said something deep and profound and actually meaningful, and 3.
Ian.
Yeah. If you were to give this film a mark out of 5, what mark would you give it?
If any one of my friends came to me and said, I was going to watch this film, I would sit them down and spend 10 to 15 minutes telling them, no, you can't do that. You shouldn't do that. It's a complete waste of your time. Go and stroke a puppy or something.
You could be stroking a puppy.
That sounds like a 1 to me.
No. It's a 0.
It's a 0. Fucking hell.
Do we allow 0s?
Yeah.
I don't think he is going to allow you to not allow a 0.
That's a curveball.
No stars.
No stars.
You've got to allow it.
Why have I got to?
Because no stars is a possibility.
Well, apparently so. I.
It must be.
Why must it?
If you start off with 5 stars for a perfect film, and for everything it does wrong, you take away a star, I've taken away all of the stars. There are none left.
I can't fault your logic. I can't fault your logic there. That is precisely what you've done.
Will it make it easier if I can float Ian one of my three.
No, no, we'll go with a zero.
All right.
That gives Heathers a score of 7.
That's bad. It's irrelevant now. It doesn't need remaking. Please don't ever do
that. No one's going to remake it.
It can't be remade.
You'd go to jail if you made this film now. You can't do it.
There was a time and a place, and that place and time have long gone.
Yeah.
And
please come on. Murder, She Wrote is going to get remade before this gets made.
Well, exactly. But Murder, She Wrote was lovely and gentle, and we're still okay with that now. It's still...
Murder, She Wrote was actually funny.
It was charming and lovely. It was lovely.
And it had a crossover with Magnum. I still can't get over that.
Everything from those 1980s, 1990s investigative things were fun on both sides of the Atlantic, actually, and they're still okay. Heather's, no, it's not. It was an example of a kind of dark satire that once worked and doesn't anymore for the subject matter that this film deals with. So don't bother, yeah? Watch Christian Slater in something else instead. But do watch him, because it's not his fault. It's the film. And you know what? I'm so glad that Stanley Kubrick never did reply to that fucking script. Because he wouldn't have. And he didn't, thankfully.
I hate most of Stanley Kubrick's films and thusly don't
but
care.
But he's a man of integrity. He's a director of integrity. And you know, he couldn't have made this.
Yeah.
And he didn't, so phew. Well done, Stanley, for never even responding to the script that landed on your doorstep.
Fair enough. Well, thank you guys for turning up and distressing yourselves.
I can say without a shadow of a doubt, it's a movie I would never have watched, and it was an experience.
And you're glad it's all over now.
Yeah, it's over now. We can let it go. So thank you for listening, everybody. We hope that you enjoyed our discussion about Heathers and that you see fit to email us some feedback at moviesyoushouldsee@simplysyndicated.com or follow us on Twitter @SimpSyn and that sort of thing. Maybe you could buy yourself a t-shirt from the store or join Simply Everything and listen to the like 240 back episodes of this show, which are all very different and not all as upsetting as this one.
Some of them are, though, aren't they, Richard? Some of them are still
Some of them are very distressing. Without a doubt, some of them I haunt my dreams.
Hour of the Wolf, perchance?
Yeah, that's
I was just thinking of that. Yeah.
Deep, deep scars.
So that's what happens. You can go and support us. We need your help. We need to survive. Give us money. We sell you things.
We're selling some lovely hoodies at the moment.
But yes,
that's what we do.
Buy t-shirts or hoodies.
I think by the time this episode's out, they're well gone.
Are they yeah.
Oh, okay. We've sold some lovely hoodies. If you own one, feel special.
Yeah.
I kind of want to make fun of all those who missed out and didn't get one. Ha ha.
Like me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've all got hoodies.
I've got one.
I got one.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for laughing at me, Richard.
It's not too late, Scott. It's still open right now. It's just when this is posted, it won't be.
Exactly.
Ah.
Have a look. They're tasty.
They are. They're nice.
I'm going right now.
Right then. Thank you for listening, everybody. We'll be back with another episode of this soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.